Log Talk Radio.
Morning, gentlemen. Want to hear our specials?
Sure.
First, we have the seafood special. It's been sitting around here for a week. We're known around these parts for our food poisoning.
Wouldn't it be great if you could be warned of life's risks? If you have diabetes, you can. It's called A1C, a simple blood test that can help measure your risk of complications from diabetes. To find out more, go to www.diabetesa1c.org. Brought to you by the American Diabetes Association, Juvenile Diabetes Research Foundation International, and the Ad Council.
Good morning and welcome to Saturday Mornings with Joy Keyes. I want to thank you for waking up this morning and joining us. Today we're going to be talking about childhood obesity. This is a serious issue and that's why I'm having the show today. I have two great guests, Dr. Carol Apovian. She's associate editor of the Obesity Journal and is co-editor of the Obesity and Nutrition section of Current Opinion in Endocrinology and Diabetes. She's from the Boston Medical Center. I want to thank you for joining me this morning.
Thank you, Joy. It's great to be here.
We also have Dr. Silva Arslanian. She's a pediatric endocrinologist at Children's Hospital of Pittsburgh. She's been there for more than 20 years. She's internationally recognized expert in the pathogenesis of type 2 diabetes in youth, obesity, insulin resistance, polycystic ovarian syndrome, and metabolic syndrome in childhood. Dr. Arslanian has traveled throughout the world educating and lecturing other scientists and clinicians. Dr. Arslanian is the Richard L. Day Endowed Professor of Pediatrics at the University of Pittsburgh School of Medicine. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
I just want to say that it scares me to see the young children today walking around, and I don't remember when I was younger that children were that large. I just want to read a little bit of an article. This is from Time Magazine. This was in June 2008. And it says that obese boys and girls are already starting to develop the illnesses of excess associated with people in their 40s and beyond. Heart disease, liver disease, diabetes, gallstones, joint breakdown, and even brain damage as fluid accumulation inside the skull leads to headaches. Vision problems, possibly lower IQs. A staggering 90% of overweight kids already have at least one avoidable risk factor for heart disease, such as high cholesterol or hypertension. Type 2 diabetes is now being diagnosed in teens as young as 15. Health experts warn that the current generation of children may be the first in American history to have a shorter life expectancy than their parents. This was in June 2008 in Time Magazine. I mean, this is staggering. What do you see, Dr. Apovian, in your practice with children? Do you see increase? I read an article in the New York Times talking about it had possibly plateaued the issue of childhood obesity, but what do you think about that?
I don't see a plateau happening anytime soon. So if you compare the prevalence of risk of overweight and overweight in children today, if you compare that to the percentage in the 60s, it has increased by threefold. So we three times the number of children today are at risk of overweight or already overweight as were overweight in the 60s. So we went from somewhere between 3% of kids to now 15%.
This is staggering.
So it is staggering, yes. And what I see in my practice, and I'm sure Dr. Slanian can talk about it as well, is that children are bombarded today with a number of things. They're bombarded with advertisements on TV for high-fat, high-calorie foods.
McDonald's, Kentucky Fried Chicken, Wendy's, ice cream.
You name it. There's a lot
of Pizza Hut.
Sure. And we didn't have that. If you compare us growing up, we didn't have that as kids. I remember walking to school, number one. I remember having, I never had soda, regular sugar-sweetened soda as a kid, but maybe I tasted it on a Sunday afternoon as a treat. And we never had dessert. We never had, so much sweetened foods around.
Right,
and
right.
We ran around all day because it was safe to run around all day, and now it's not safe.
Right.
So there are many things that have happened very quickly over the past 30 to 50 years that have that could be the reason why we're seeing this today.
Yes. Dr. Arslanian, what do we define obesity as? I mean, because there are some kids who have, you know, I mean, fluffy cheeks. My daughter, when she was born, she was like, you know, a bundle of joy, so to speak, and she had round cheeks and, you know, thick legs. And at what point, well, first, what is the definition of obesity versus just being slightly overweight? Why don't we deal with that, Dr. Arslanian?
Okay. You know, in adults, obesity is defined with a certain cutoff of body mass index, which is really the proportion of weight to height. But because children are growing until they complete their growth around 18 or 19, you cannot take an absolute cutoff. So it has to be based on BMI percentiles. So the Institute of Medicine or the Obesity Task Force defines obesity as a gender and age-specific BMI above the 95th percentile.
Mm-hmm.
And overweight is above 85th to 95th percentile.
Now, can someone, I mean, a child can be slightly plump, but doesn't mean they're unhealthy. They can still be healthy. They don't have high blood pressure. They don't have type 2 diabetes. So at what point, because, you know, some people could look at that BMI chart and maybe be slightly above but still be healthy. So at what point should a parent worry, Dr. Arslanian? At what point?
Well, any time a child's BMI is above the 85th percentile, one has
mm-hmm.
to make sure that certain modifiable risk factors can be evaluated and checked to make sure if they're normal or abnormal. So the things that typically should happen besides a regular physician visit and physical examination is to check fasting lipid levels, for example, liver function tests, of course, blood pressure. And then depending on the history, you may do additional workup to find out if there are obesity-associated comorbidities. That's what we call them. So if you don't do any of this, you will not know if they are there or not. And interestingly, I think one of the big problems is that parents and physicians are still very reluctant. I don't know how it is in Boston, but definitely in Pittsburgh and in other places, they're very reluctant to tell the family that your child has a weight problem and should be seen by a nutritionist or weight specialist. Typically, these children are referred to pediatric endocrinologists saying that they have a hormonal problem.
Dr. Arpovian, do you see that in your practice, that physicians are reluctant to, I guess, tell the parents the truth about their children? I guess it's somehow you have to gently tell the parent, because sometimes parents get offended about, I guess, a diagnosis. Do you see that, Dr. Arpovian?
Oh, sure. I see more parental reluctance, and it's understandable. You know, here in Massachusetts, we are now sending letters home from school to parents indicating the child's BMI, body mass index, and indicating whether or not they're above the 85th percentile. And parents are already reacting to that as being, you know, an invasion of and an embarrassment. And I think some of the schools in Massachusetts and elsewhere have instituted certain rules that I think are terrific, such as within the school proper, candy is not allowed. So you cannot even, in some school districts, you cannot even bring candy into the school, say, in your lunchbox.
Right. Well, my daughter's school, I know they added salads, and they have a salad bar. They have, instead of a soda machine, they have fruit juices and bottled water in the machines. So I was extremely happy when they instituted that. And actually she was too, because in our household, we don't buy soda unless maybe it's like a party or something, because that's kind of how I grew up. We had milk, juice, and water. That's what we had in our house. Let me just read something from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation. This was a study in the April 2009 Archives of Pediatric and Adolescent Medicine. The study finds that 1 in 5 preschoolers obese, ethnic minorities disproportionately affected. The study found that Asian American children had the lowest obesity rates it was a 12%, 15% for Caucasian children, 20% for African American children, 22% for Hispanic, and 31% for Native American, Native Alaskan children. So we talked about, you know, what is obesity versus what is overweight. Now, with genetics, Dr. Arslanian, what is your familiarity with? How does genetics affect the child's obesity and also culture? Because food is very important in our culture. When you say go out with your girlfriends, let's go get a drink of coffee, come by my house. If I don't offer you food, you might be offended. Food is a very integral part of a lot of different cultures. Dr. Arslanian, what do you understand about how genetics and culture affect the child's obesity?
Well, I mean, there's no question that obesity runs in families, but then it becomes very difficult to determine, is this genetically driven or is it environmentally driven? There are some studies that have looked at the genetic determinants in large-scale populations, and yes, there are some genetic mutations that are associated with obesity, but those are the very rare cases. It's not the garden variety obesity. So it's only 0.5% of childhood obesity can be attributed to genetics. Now, as far as why certain ethnicities or certain racial groups are at higher risk for obesity, that's most likely multifactorial, from culture, from socioeconomic class differences, and eating habits, and a variety of those factors. And actually, our research has shown that there are some biological differences that could potentially predispose black children to accumulate more body fat if the environment is conducive to obesity. But the thing is to remember that I can't change what I have inherited from my parents. I can't change my genes, but I can try to modify my environment in preventing obesity. That's what it should boil down to: change the environment, starting from the home environment to the school environment, and at a larger scale, society, national, international.
Right. Dr. Arslanian.
Yes, I completely agree with Dr. Arslanian. I just think that, you know, if you look at what's been happening over the past 50 years, so we've increased the prevalence of risk of overweight and overweight in kids by threefold. Genetics, we don't think that genetics works that quickly. So if you have the genes to predispose you to gain weight in the proper environment, those haven't changed.
Mm-hmm.
What's changed, right, they don't really change so quickly. They change over thousands and millions of years. And so we think what's really changed is the environment. And so we think, again, that the ease or the fastest way to alter what's been going on is to change the environment and not to try to change, you know, try to find
internal.
Some way to alter our genetics. So that's why we've been calling for a public health effort, governmental control over what is being promoted to our children.
Right.
And getting more sidewalks and facilities to improve exercise, increase physical activity in our kids and adults for that matter, promoting removing the obesogenic environment. So we have an obesogenic environment, certainly in the United States, and we can argue all over the world at this point.
Globally, yes. I mean, it's interesting that we have poor, you know, we talk about culture, but also economics affects people's physical state, and one of those issues is the access to affordable food in terms of supermarkets that have fresh fruit, fresh vegetables, whole foods, you know, that promote health, you know, promote energy. And a lot of poor neighborhoods where there may be larger minority groups living, they don't have access to these healthy foods, or if they're there, they're extremely expensive. So it's the decision of a parent who doesn't have a lot of money, well, I need to feed my kids, maybe buying a lot of things that are boxed or packaged versus things that are, you know, like fruits and vegetables. What is your opinion about that, Dr. Arslanian, in terms of the access to healthy foods? Do you feel that that affects childhood obesity?
I mean, that could be a component, but at the same time, as Dr. Apovian was saying, and that when she was growing up, she drank water, or in your household, there's only water and milk. So tap water is free. Meanwhile, a lot of these children are consuming soda or Coke on a daily basis. So that's money spent unwisely. So, yes, I agree that sometimes healthier foods may not be easily accessible, but the fact that unhealthy foods are being consumed without thought being paid to it is, again, a problem. So maybe we can work at that end, try to eliminate the unhealthy choices. There is absolutely no room for soda or Coke in my dictionary for any child.
Mm. And what does the soda, Dr. Apovian, the soda is affecting the sugar, the increase for chance of diabetes, their teeth, eroding their teeth. What are some things that unhealthy foods do? I mentioned in that article about heart disease, diabetes, headaches, also depression. I know there's been studies about how food can affect your mental state. Dr. Apovian, are you familiar at all with that issue?
Well, yes. Well, you know, if you don't eat, if you don't take in your daily quota of fruits and vegetables and which has vitamins and phytochemicals and fiber to keep your body healthy, and you're taking in a lot of sugar, sweetened soda, and high fat, high calorie items, and your fat mass is increasing at the expense of your muscle mass, it's going to affect your mental state. Period, end of sentence. And on top of that, your weight gain is going to affect your mental state because kids are going to make fun of you, which is happening in schools now. Kids are being ostracized. They're being made fun of. So are adults, for that matter. And then sleep, you're going to be more sleep deprived because you can't possibly, with all that sugar and caffeine in these sodas, you can't possibly be getting a good night's sleep. And sleep also affects our mental state. However, even beyond that, what the sugar, you know, I don't want to just target sugar sweetened soda because juice has just as many calories as sugar sweetened soda. So any time kids are drinking and adults are drinking their calories with anything other than low fat milk, we think there are studies to suggest that perhaps the brain does not register these calories as much as it registered food eaten with calories, so that you're not as full as you might be if you ate those calories.
Okay.
So studies have shown that kids who drink soda eat another 250 calories a day.
Wow. Dr. Arslanian, I want to bring her in the conversation. What should kids be eating? We have about 10, 12 minutes left. What should kids be eating? How many fruits and vegetables? How many grains? How much protein? How much water should they be drinking? Dr. Arslanian?
It's hard because that has to be based on the child's age and the body size, et cetera. But, I mean, a common sense approach to healthy eating is that snack foods that are high in fat, like chips and nachos and Doritos smothered in cheese, don't belong in any child's diet or in any adult's diet. Soft drinks don't belong in their diet, but rather, you know, a balanced meal that we call it the healthy plate, that one portion the size of a fist is carbohydrate, one portion the size of a fist is protein, meat, chicken, fish, whatever, and another portion is vegetable, you know. So it's really, I mean, in our approach of treating childhood obesity, it's trying to convince parents and children that it's really healthy eating. It's not diet. It's not starvation. It's not decreasing calorie, but making people aware of what's healthy and what's unhealthy. And the same thing as far as activity. Being on a computer for 8 hours or staying up till 4 a.m., IMing or watching movies is a very unhealthy lifestyle. an hour a day TV is acceptable. The American Academy allows 2 hours a day. So it's really those common sense approaches that we were not taught when we were growing up, but now it seems like we have to constantly hammer into our patients.
Constantly educate.
Yes.
Now, what, I mean, who's responsible? I mean, we have the parents. We talked about the parents being aware. We talked about the parents when they come to a visit for a checkup that physicians are wary of telling them that the children are obese. What about schools? We talked about the changing the snacks in schools. What about the government and the environment or politics? Like in terms of, we talked about sidewalks and parks and also safety. There's a lot of neighborhoods in our country that are not safe for a child to go run around in without the fear of getting shot, so to speak. I mean, so how do we talk to the government, our politicians, our council people, and say, hey, can we somehow abate this violence? Can we make the streets cleaner? Can we have more trees? What steps can we do? Dr. Apovian, what's your opinion about that in terms of the government getting involved in this childhood obesity epidemic?
I think the government is already involved. I certainly the Obama administration, this is on their radar. It's on the radar of every state official at this point. In terms of the obesity societies and the medical community, we are lobbying the government. I think it's a matter of getting enough communication between. So who's involved? Everybody. The schools, the food industry, the government, the community, and the medical community. Everybody working together to make obesity, to stop obesity as being the default. So right now, if you are in the United States and you just go around and eat whatever is available,
mm-hmm.
and you do whatever is the easiest thing to do, you will gain weight if you have those genes, and most of us do. So that obesity is now the default. What we have to do is make healthy living the default in this society, and that's
what Dr. Arslanian was saying. That it's not a one time; it's a lifestyle. It's something that you're going to do on a daily basis, not to feel like you have to suffer, because you
that's
can only
right.
eat fruits and vegetables. But I see children all the time with little juices, like you said, the chips in the morning. I mean, okay, I'll admit when I was in high school, you're trying to wake up, you're trying to focus. And I said this on another show. I used to drink Lipton iced tea and a Snickers bar because I felt that was
amazing.
That was the least unhealthy thing out of all the things in the machine or whatever. But it also gave me a boost. But then I crashed afterwards and I was really tired. So of course I realized that's not the best thing. But I was a teenager. I mean, we talked about the social media. How can we use the social media like Facebook, like MySpace? We have Twitter now, all these things. How could we use them to maybe reach out to the children? Because sometimes children don't listen to their parents. They don't want to listen to the teachers. So how can we use this new social media maybe to reach out? Dr. Arslanian, do you have any opinion about that?
Well, maybe my opinion is biased a little bit. I think the media is bombarding the population with news about obesity, healthy lifestyle, and how to change the way we do things. But short of economic change combined with policy change, we are not going to be able to reverse the epidemic of obesity. To my mind, it's very similar to the smoking campaign. Who would have ever imagined 40 years ago that a bar in New York would be a smoking-free place? That's what we have to strive to do with the obesity campaign. There has to be policy change. Let me give you an example, and this may be very radical. You can tax the unhealthy food and use the tax to create after-school activity programs for children in a healthy, in a safe environment.
So that's an interesting.
I agree completely with Dr. Aslanian. However, if you tax high-calorie foods, then I think you've got to subsidize fruits and vegetables and healthy foods so that the underprivileged in our society can afford them. So in other words, you tax
But you've got to also tax sugar-sweetened beverages and other high-calorie, high-fat foods enough so that it affects. You can't just put a 2-cent tax on every soda because people are still going to buy them, right?
That's I think she's saying a higher tax. Dr. Arcolini is
very
saying
high
a higher
tax.
Yes. Yeah,
just
but
like
the
smoking,
issue.
Just like we did with cigarettes. But then on the other side, you've got to give our underprivileged a way to eat healthier. And you've got to make fruits and vegetables and lean protein and low-fat milk products cheaper.
That's why I said it has to be economic change combined with policy change.
Yes, I agree.
I'm a pediatric endocrinologist. I don't know how to do those things. But I have to mobilize these people, the experts, to create the situation and provide those healthy nutritional choices to disadvantaged populations within the school system. Again, schools have vending machines because it supports the salary of a teacher.
Right.
If we can subsidize the teacher's salary or education, then we can get rid of the vending machines and things like that.
Ladies, I want to thank both of you for coming on this one. We have about 3 minutes left. I want to mention to the audience that if you do have a question, you can call in 646-929-0368. Dr. Carol Povian, again, is from the Boston Medical Center. Dr. Silva Arslani is from the Children's Hospital in Pittsburgh. And I think we had a great conversation today, one about what is obesity versus being overweight. Dr. Arslani brought up BMI issue. We talked about, yes, you may not have a lot of money, but you still have a choice about what you're going to use your money for. The issue of having soda with children is, at Dr. Arslani's opinion, is really absolutely unneeded. Dr. Apovian grew up without it. I myself did not have it in my household, and my child has grown up fine without the soda being in the household. In terms of schools, we didn't mention the issue of physical education. A lot of schools getting their physical education programs cut maybe 1 to 2 days, and we always read that at least 5 days a week, maybe 60 minutes a day, is what type of exercise we're supposed to be doing. So these are all important issues. It's a constant conversation that we have to have. Also, cutting down the amount of TV, internet, you know, chatting, Twittering that your children are doing, and getting them more involved in taking a walk outside in your neighborhoods is another healthy thing to do. Next week, there's a large conference. We talked about what can the government do. There's a large conference the CDC is putting on called The Weight of the Nation. And if you want to read more about that, you can go to www.weightofthenation.org to read about this tremendous conference with a lot of wonderful guests going to be there talking about what we talked about today. Again, Dr. Apovian, what's your closing statement today? We have 2 minutes left. What do you think?
I think first you have to educate our population, keep education going, nutrition, physical activity in the school system, educate the parents. Then the next step after education is subsidizing fruits and vegetables and taxing high-fat, high-calorie junk foods, and people will accept that once you finish your education process. This is all government. The medical community will back the government up, and that's what we have to do to stop the obesity epidemic.
Dr. Arslani, your closing words have about 1 minute.
One plea to parents that nobody's pointing fingers at anyone. It's like any other disease situation. It's nobody's fault when they get cancer. It's nobody's fault when they get overweight or obese. Please have their children get the needed help so that as adults they don't, or even as children, don't suffer adult diseases prematurely. That's all.
Thank you so much this morning for joining me, Dr. Apovian, Dr. Arslanian. I really appreciate your knowledge and taking the time out of your Saturday mornings. I'm sure we'll talk again in the future. I want to thank the guests, the listeners this morning for listening on your computer. And again, check in next Saturday, July 25th, 11 a.m. Eastern. We're going to be talking to the coordinators of the Black Women's Arts Festival and also talking to Marty Reguster. He's a world-renowned photographer. He was chosen as citizen diplomat and recently came back from Poland and Paris doing an exchange program with photographers there. So next Saturday, July 25th, 11 a.m. Eastern, the call-in number is 646-929-0368. I want to thank everyone for joining me on Saturday mornings with Joy Keyes, and have a wonderful weekend. Thank you so much, ladies.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Bye-bye.
Honey, put this on top of the minivan.
We're only going for 2 weeks. You want me to back the kitchen sink, too?
Well, is there room?
Hey, you guys. You going on vacation?
Who's that?
I don't know.
Because we're planning on robbing your house tonight.
All right, I'm calling.